A quarter of a mile away in the Texas Star, Matt managed to dismiss the little niggling feeling he had about the fourth card player, and he followed Hawkins up to the bar. Hawkins walked around behind the bar and stopped next to the bartender.
I will personally serve this gentleman, Johnny.
Yes, sir.
Hawkins drew Matt a beer, then set the golden mug in front of him, filled high with a foaming head. Matt lifted the mug and took a long, satisfying drink before he set it back down, now half empty.
That was good.
You drank that beer like you hadn't had one in a while. It's been a dry day or two. Let me freshen that for you. Thanks.
It took but a moment to put a new head on the beer in front of Matt.
This man Pruitt, he seems mighty green yet to be a marshal. He must be pretty good to hold a job as young as he is.
It isn't a matter of being good, as much as it is a matter of him being willing to take on the job. It hasn't been all that easy for us to find marshals.
Why are you having trouble filling the position and keeping him on? Aren't you paying enough?
Hawkins drew a beer for himself.
Oh, we're paying him about as much as any town within 100 miles of here. It's not a matter of keeping them on the job. It's a matter of keeping them alive.
At that moment, Marshal Pruitt came into the saloon and, seeing Matt standing at the bar, smiled and started toward him.
Mr. Jensen, I've interviewed the driver, the shotgun guard, and the passengers of the coach, and they are all singing your praises.
Let me hasten to add my voice to the choir. I know for a fact that he saved me $200, for that's the amount I had on my person at the time the coach was stopped, and I don't doubt that he may have saved my life as well.
I also learned a little about you, but you are a little off your range down here, aren't you? From what I've heard, you're from Colorado.
To be honest, Marshal, I don't know as I could say I'm from anywhere, though I have spent quite some time in Colorado. I was partly raised there by a man named Smoke Jensen.
Well, Mr. Jensen, on behalf of the good people of Shady Rest, I'd like to welcome you to our little town. Gerald, give Mr. Jensen a drink on me.
Ha! You picked a good day to be generous, Marshal. I've already told him that everything he drinks today is on me.
Matt held up his beer.
I appreciate it, Marshal, but this is about my limit. I generally drink one for thirst and one for taste, and this is the one for taste.
At least let me pay for one of them.
Pruitt put a nickel on the bar.
Oh, you cheating son of a bitch!
Looking toward the disturbance, Matt saw a man standing over a table holding a broken whiskey bottle. It was the man whose back had bent to him when he first came into the bar, and he still couldn't see his face. He could see the other man, though. And there were streaks of blood streaming down from a wound on his scalp, though the bleeding didn't appear to be too severe. He took out a handkerchief and held it to his head.
By God, nobody cheats me and gets away with it.
Oh, I don't have to cheat to beat you, Morgan.
The hell you say? I can play cards as good as anyone, and I say you're cheating me. I'm calling you out on it.
Is the fancy dude a cheat, Hawkins?
No, that's Emerson Culpepper. He's a professional gambler, and he's very good.
Who's the loudmouth?
That unpleasant gentleman goes by the name of Morgan. He spends most of his time down on Plantation Row, which is fine by me.
Marshal, does the name Mutt Crowley mean anything to you?
No, not particularly. Should it?
Mutt Crowley and his partner killed a rancher and his wife a little over a year ago. Last time I saw him, he was in jail in Trinidad, Colorado, waiting for the hangman's noose.
Why do you ask about him?
That's him over there, arguing with the gambler.
How sure are you that this is the same man?
I'm 100% sure. I told you he was in jail in Trinidad. I'm the one who put him there. He escaped an hour before he was set to hang. I'd appreciate it if you would appoint me as your deputy so I could finish the job I started.
I'm gonna put a bullet right through that fancy shirt of yours, you cheating son of a bitch!
Mr. Morgan, as I'm sure you can see, I am not armed. I have found that not being armed manages to defuse most arguments.
He removed his bloody handkerchief from the wound on his head and looked at it.
Oh, broken whiskey bottles notwithstanding.
That only means that you're a coward. You better get healed pretty damn quick, because I aim to shoot your guts out.
Do you want me to handle this?
I appreciate your offer, Matt, but being as I'm the marshal, I better handle the job myself.
Pruitt drew his pistol and turned toward Crowley.
Crowley, you are under arrest.
Crowley turned toward the marshal.
What'd you call me?
I called you Crowley. That is your name, isn't it? Mutt Crowley.
I don't know what you're talking about. You got me confused with someone else.
Have I? Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you come with me on down to the office? I'll send out a few telegrams, and if you're not Crowley, we can get the situation resolved pretty quickly.
Why don't you mind your own business?
I just heard you threaten Mr. Culpepper. And whether your name is Morgan or Crowley, that threat alone is enough for me to put you under arrest. But this gentleman is willing to swear that you are Mutt Crowley and that you are wanted for murder. And, seeing as I'm the marshal in this town, I believe that makes it my business.
Crowley looked over at Matt, noticing him for the first time.
Jensen! What the hell are you doing here?
So we meet again, Crowley.
I don't know what you're talking about. This man is lying. I never met him before in my life. And I'm not Mutt Crowley.
What do you mean you've never met him? You just called him by name.
Well, that don't mean nothing. He's famous. Ain't you heard of him?
I think you'd better come with me, Mr. Crowley.
Marshal Pruitt made a motion toward the front door with his drawn pistol. Crowley turned toward him with a humorless smile.
Well now, Mr. Town Marshal, I gave you your opportunity to mind your own business, but it seems like you just invited yourself to this party.
Indeed I have. Now, unbuckle your gun belt and let it fall to the floor.
Crowley moved his hand toward his gun belt, slowly and deliberately, and as he did so, Pruitt looked over toward Culpepper, who was still bleeding from a scalp wound.
Mr. Culpepper, are you badly hurt? Do you need to see the doctor?
With a look of shocked surprise on his face, the young marshal dropped his pistol, took a couple of staggering steps backward, then fell.
Oh, you seen that, didn't you? You all seen that he drawed his gun first. He made a mistake, is all. I ain't this man Crowley that he's talking about. My name is Morgan.
You're lying, Crowley.
Matt put his beer down and faced Crowley.
Your name is Mutt Crowley, and you're a thieving, murdering, lying son of a bitch. Marshal Pruitt told you to unbuckle your gun belt, which, as a lawman, he had every right to do. What you just did is commit another murder.
Oh, yeah? Well, what business is this of yours, anyway?
If you recall, I'm the one that got you put in prison the last time, and I'm the one that's gonna do it again.
You're gonna put me in prison, are you? Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm either gonna put you in prison, or I'm gonna kill you. Which will it be, Crowley? You can make the choice.
Jensen, you ain't got no sense at all, have you? Maybe you ain't noticed it, but there's two of us here, and only one of us is holding a gun. And as you can see, you ain't the one holding the gun.
Mr. Hawkins, would you kindly send someone for the deputy?
Mr. Jensen, I hate to say this, but Deputy Prescott isn't up to handling something like this.
Oh, don't worry about that, Mr. Hawkins. It won't be a problem. By the time the deputy gets here, it'll be all over. Crowley will either surrender without resistance, or I'll kill him right here and right now.
The hell you say?
Crowley lifted his pistol.
How the hell?
It wasn't necessary for Hawkins to send someone for the deputy marshal because he was just down the street when he heard the shooting and he hurried to the saloon.
Here's Deputy Prescott now.
This was the same man Matt had seen leaning against the support post back at the stage depot. He was small and wiry, with a scraggly white beard and unkempt hair. He took one look at the two bodies on the floor, then turned his head toward a brass platoon.
I be damned. It looks like we done had us another marshal got himself killed. At least this time he killed the man that killed him.
No, I'm afraid not. Crowley killed Marshal Pruitt. Then Crowley was killed by Matt Jensen here, the same man who thwarted the coach robbery.
Crowley? Who's Crowley?
That man.
I thought his name was Morgan.
He was just calling himself Morgan. It turns out that his real name was Mutt Crowley.
Well, how do you know that was his real name?
Because I knew him.
You knew him? And you killed one of your own friends?
Believe me, he was no friend.
Damn. You had a busy day, ain't you, Mr. Jensen? How many men have you killed today? Three?
It's been a bit more active than a normal day.
Mr. Jensen, I owe you my thanks. You saved my life.
No, it was Marshal Pruitt who stepped in and saved your life.
Yes, I suppose it was.
Culpepper looked down toward the dead marshal.
He didn't last any longer than the others, but you can't say the young man was lacking in grit.
Well, Wash, looks like that makes you the marshal. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Marshal Wash Prescott.
It don't have no ring to it at all, on account that I ain't gonna be the marshal.
Where's your sense of civic duty?
I'm serving as a deputy. That's all the civic duty I want. You can just go find yourself someone else to get himself killed, because I ain't gonna do it.
Prescott looked over at Matt.
You want a marshal? Then why don't you get the city council to hire this fella? Hell, he's been here less than one full day, and he's done killed three people.
May I remind you, Wash, that all three people needed killing? And I can personally attest to that, as I was a witness to all three incidents.
Don't get me wrong. I ain't saying they didn't need killing. If that scar-faced son of a bitch killed the marshal, then he sure as hell needed killing. And I was just commentating, that's all. I mean, when you think about it, we're going to need a marshal that ain't all that easy to kill, and seems to me like Mr. Jensen here fits the bill.
Yes. What about it, Mr. Jensen? Would you be interested in being our town marshal? I know that the mayor would appoint you in a heartbeat.
I'd appreciate the offer, but no, I don't think I would be interested.
Well, that's too bad. That leaves you, Wash.
No, it don't, 'cause I ain't gonna do it.
Marshal Pruitt's been killed!
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure! I was there! I seen it with my own eyes!
Do me, who shot the marshal?
Morgan shot him!
Morgan? You mean the fellow that's been hanging around here so much?
Yeah, only his name weren't Morgan. It was Crowley. But it ain't nothing now, seeing as he's dead.
Wait a minute. You saying it was Morgan who was killed? I thought you just said he was the one who killed the marshal.
Crowley.
Who is Crowley?
Morgan.
What?
Turns out Morgan's real name was Crowley. Crowley killed the marshal, then he got himself killed.
So Morgan, or Crowley, whatever his name is dead?
Yep, him too.
Lenny Fletcher was sitting over in the corner of the saloon, and he looked up when he heard Doomy say that Crowley had been killed. At the moment, Bill Carter was with Lila, one of the whores. They had made a deal with her that she would give them a little off her normal price if they would both buy her services. Carter won the coin toss as to who would be first. Doomy looked over toward Fletcher.
Crowley was your friend, wasn't he? Yours and Carter's. I've seen the three of you together all the time.
I wouldn't call him a friend exactly. I never met either one of them boys till I come here.
So you're saying you didn't know that his real name was Crowley?
I ain't never heard of nobody named Crowley.
Doomy, who says that Morgan's real name was Crowley?
Matt Jensen, the one who shot him. You know, the same fella that saved the stagecoach and killed two other robbers. And here's the thing. Morgan already had his gun out when Jensen drawed his own gun and shot him.
You sure he's dead?
I'll say he's deader than shit.
Lenny Fletcher wasn't the only one listening with interest to the conversation. Brax Barlow, who hadn't been in the saloon long enough to drink his first beer, was standing at the far end of the bar, also listening.
This man, Matt Jensen, are you sure he's the one that saved the stagecoach?
Oh, he's the one, all right. They say he killed two of the robbers and sent the other in skedaddling.
I'd like to meet him.
What for?
I'd like to shake his hand. I mean, good citizen like that, who wouldn't want to shake his hand?
Oh, well, more than likely you'll find him down at the Texas Star. Leastwise, that's where he was when I left over there, and that weren't more than a couple minutes ago.
Where's the Texas Star at?
It's up at the other end of town on Railroad Street. You can't miss it. It's the only saloon over on Railroad Street.
Carter was sweating and thrusting against the woman who lay beneath him. She was totally inert, neither resisting nor reacting to him.
Why don't you help a little bit?
You're not paying me enough for that.
Bill! Bill, it's me!
Carter stopped in mid-thrust.
Honey, that was good. Are you done yet?
What?
Come to the door!
I told you I'll come get you! Can't you wait your turn?
That ain't it! It's something else, something important.
Honey, if you're finished, get off of me so's I can get myself cleaned up for your friend.
I'm not.
Carter rolled off her.
Never mind. Open the door for my friend.
I'm naked, honey. I don't have any clothes on.
What the hell does it matter? He's gonna see you naked in a few minutes anyway.
Carter got up, then he looked back at Lila and pointed at her.
All right, I'll answer the door, but you stay there in bed till I tell you you can get up.
He walked over to the door and jerked it open.
What do you want?
Then, realizing that he was standing naked in the doorway, he stepped back.
Come on in.
It's Crowley.
You mean Morgan?
No, I mean Crowley. Everyone knows about him now since he's been killed.
Killed? Wait a minute, are you saying Crowley's been killed?
Yes.
Who killed him?
Matt Jensen.
Jensen? Son of a bitch, that's the one Crowley told us about, ain't it? The one that put him in jail when they was gonna hang him? What the hell's he doing way down here? Are you sure it was Matt Jensen that killed him?
Oh, I'm sure, all right. Seems some man tried to hold up a stagecoach today and Jensen killed two of them and run off a third one.
Yeah, well, Crowley said he was a corker. So why'd you come banging on the door disturbing me? What does him getting himself killed have to do with us?
Think about it. Now that everyone knows who Crowley was, that means that more than likely they're going to know about the bank robbery and the killings up in Kansas. And they're going to know we've been running with them. And they're going to start putting two and two together.
Shh. Carter glanced over at Lila, but she was staring at the ceiling and playing absently with her hair.
Oh, I don't think she heard nothing.
Nevertheless, I think we should get out of here.
Not yet. I ain't had my time yet.
And I ain't finished with my time. It was just going good when you come up and start banging on the door. You're just going to have to wait.
Why do I have to wait? We're sharing her anyway, ain't we?
After leaving the Texas Star, Matt Jensen walked down to the stagecoach depot where he was warmly greeted by Dusty Reasoner. Reasoner was talking to another man, average-sized, bald, except for a ringlet of gray hair that passed around his head just above his ears.
Mr. Jensen, good to see you again. Mr. Tobin, this is Matt Jensen. He's the fella I was telling you about.
Mr. Tobin?
Dusty told me what you did for us today, and you have my thanks.
There wasn't much to it. I just happened to be there at the right time.
Yes, but a lot of people, even if they had been there, would have been too frightened to get involved. You got involved, and for that, I thank you. I heard you just had another, well, let us call it an adventure. Word is, we just lost another marshal, and that you killed the man who had killed the marshal.
Yes.
Well, that's some consolation. I'm sure you've already heard that we've had three marshals killed before this one. At least this time, the killer didn't get away with it.
I hope you're not leaving us so quick. Did you come to get your horse, or just to check on him? Because if all you want to do is check on him, you can step back there and have a look. You'll see he's getting along just fine.
Thanks, but actually I've come from a saddlebags. I'm going to take a much-needed bath, and I'll be needing a change of clothes.
No problem. I brought your tack in. It's right over there in the corner.
Thanks.
A few minutes later, Matt found himself in the model barber shop. A man wearing a long white coat came from the back.
Yes, sir?
I'd like a bath.
Yes, sir. I'll get the hot water for you.
I didn't notice. Is there a laundry in town?
You came to the right place. Fu Quan has a place in the alley just behind the barber shop, and he does a real bang-up job.
It's getting pretty late. Is he still open?
Chinamen don't never sleep. Didn't you know that?
I didn't know that. That must be a piece of knowledge that escaped me.
Rex Barlow walked inside the Texas Star and stepped up to the bar.
I saw a body in a wagon out front and now this one. Which one is Mutt Crowley?
Oh, this one is. The fellow in the wagon out front is our town marshal. Well, that is, he was our town marshal. Now he's dead. Crowley killed him, and Crowley got himself killed.
Well, who killed Crowley?
Oh, none other than Matt Jensen. I reckon you heard of Matt Jensen, ain't you?
Is he the one who killed the two men out in the road?
Well, you mean the two outlaws that was trying to hold up the stage? Oh, yeah, he's the one.
Well, where is he now? This Matt Jensen fella, I mean.
More than likely, he's down at the barbershop, getting himself a bath.
Brax felt a bit of apprehension over the new man who'd joined the conversation. He recognized him as one of the stagecoach passengers, and he was concerned that despite the hood he'd worn, this man might recognize him.
He's going to be having dinner with Miss Annabelle O'Callaghan. Now, if you were going to be having dinner with a pretty woman like that, wouldn't you want to get all gussied up?
Brax breathed a bit easier. It was obvious that he had not been recognized. Brax turned to leave.
Wait a minute.
Brax froze in his tracks and turned back around.
Do you know Jensen? Do you want to leave a message for him?
No, I don't know him. I just heard a lot about him is all, and I thought I'd like to meet him.
Well, I haven't known him all that long, and I know he's famous and all, but he strikes me as a man who doesn't like to be fawned over. So I would remember that if I were you.
Yeah, thanks. I reckon I'll just take a look at him from some distance, just so that someday I can tell folks I seen him.
Brax hurried on out the door. Matt was, at this very moment, sitting in the bathtub in the back of the model barbershop. He had finished his bath, but he had stayed in the tub until the hot water began to cool, remaining there because it was relaxing to a body that was sore from several days of being in the saddle, as well as sleeping on the ground.
Sir, you can't go in there. I told you, the bathing room is occupied.
Get the hell out of my way or I'll shoot you too.
Quickly, Matt stepped out of the tub, then moved over into the corner where he pulled his pistol from the holster. The door of the bathing room was pushed open and a man stepped inside.
You son of a bitch, I'm gonna kill you! Where the hell are you, son of a bitch? Huh?
I'm over here. Barber, would you get the deputy, please?
Tentatively, the barber looked into the room and saw Matt standing naked in the corner, holding his pistol on the intruder.
Yes, sir, Mr. Jensen. I'll get him right away.
Doing a balancing act and passing his gun from hand to hand, Matt pulled on a pair of pants.
You want to tell me why you were trying to kill me?
You mean you don't know?
How am I supposed to know? I never saw you before 1 minute ago when you barged in here shooting. What's your name?
The name is Barlow. Braxton Barlow.
Why were you trying to kill me, Braxton Barlow?
Them two men you killed on the road today was my brothers.
Were you with them?
No. I wouldn't just ride off and leave my brothers like that.
Who said anything about anyone riding off?
Nobody. I heard people talking.
I see. Well, Barlow, when you go into the business of stagecoach robbing, you have to be prepared to take the consequences. And more times than not, those consequences could mean getting yourself killed.
A short time earlier, Mayor Trout requested Deputy Wash Prescott to take a walk with him and talk.
Now, Wash, you have been the only stabilizing influence in our town. You've been a deputy for nearly 2 years now, and every marshal we've had has spoken very highly of you. It seems to me like the most logical thing you could do would be to assume the position of marshal. Oh, and how about this? I'll have the city council approve a new salary for you. You'll be making more than any marshal this town has ever had.
What good is more money if I'm dead? I'm satisfied with being the deputy.
Well, if you think about it, you are the titular marshal now. You just aren't being paid for it.
I'm the what? What does titties have to do with being a marshal?
Never mind. What I'm saying is, with young Devery Pruitt dead, you are the acting marshal.
I'm not trying to get out of that. I'll be an acting marshal for you, but only till you get a real marshal.
Prescott and Trout spun quickly to see where the gunshots came from.
The barber shop?
Prescott saw Earl Cook, the barber, hurrying toward him.
Deputy Prescott, come quick!
What is Cook? You ain't planning on getting me into no gunfight now, are you? I'm just a deputy, remember?
No, it ain't nothing like that. Mr. Jensen, he's already got the fella captured.
What fella you talking about?
The fella that tried to kill him. That's the fella I'm talking about.
You ain't making no sense at all.
You don't have to be worrying about nothing. All you have to do is put the fella in jail. Like I said, Jensen has him captured, and he isn't even armed.
All right, hold your horses. I didn't say I wasn't coming.
Matt wasn't able to put on any more clothes than his pants because he had to keep an eye on Brax Barlow.
Hello?
We're back here.
Is everything all right?
If you mean, am I still holding him prisoner, the answer is yes. Come get him now so I can get dressed.
The deputy stepped into the room with his gun drawn.
Who you got?
He says his name is Barlow. He and his brothers were the ones who tried to hold up the coach today.
Is that a fact? Well, Mr. Barlow, I reckon you just chose the wrong town to mess with. Come on, let's go.
Prescott waved his pistol to signal Barlow to follow him.
I'll be down later to sign a statement for you if you want.
What kind of statement? What you mean?
Won't you need a statement as to how he came in here and tried to kill me?
Oh, yeah. I guess so. You can come down in time.
When the whore left, Carter felt it was time to get down to business.
You know we're going to have to take care of Jensen, don't you?
What do you mean, take care of him?
You know what I mean. We're going to have to kill him. If he found Crowley, then he'll find us.
But from what Doomy said, he wasn't looking for Crowley. He just happened to find him.
Which means he could just happen to find us if we don't do something about it.
Well, I don't know about you, but I don't have any hankering to go up against Jensen, even if it is 2-1. I heard what Doomy said. Crowley already had his gun out, but Jensen killed him anyway.
Who said anything about going up against him? I said we were going to have to kill him. I didn't say about doing it fair. This ain't no contest. It's just us against him. Only I don't plan to give him a chance.
Well, how do you plan to do it?
We'll shoot the son of a bitch from ambush. He won't even see it coming.
Yeah, Yeah, if we're gonna kill him, that'd be the best way to do it.
The sooner the better.
Annabelle O'Callaghan stood back and looked at the way the dress was hanging. Lillian Trout, wife of the mayor, was wearing the dress Annabelle had made for her, a slate-gray velvet walking suit trimmed in red cashmere frieze.
Oh, this is absolutely the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Annabelle, my dear, you are a treasure. Please don't ever leave Shady Rest. Why, the ladies would be absolutely bereft.
I have no plans to go anywhere.
Annabelle glanced toward the clock.
Oh, well, except for dinner tonight, and I must hurry and get dressed. Do you mind if I leave you to find your own way out?
No, of course not. I don't mind at all, my dear. But what is it about dinner that has you so, eager?
I'm having dinner with Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen? Has he recently arrived in town? I don't believe I have met him.
He is the one who stopped the stagecoach robbery today.
Oh, yes! I heard about that! So you are having dinner with the hero, are you? Well, you must tell me all about it.
It's just a dinner. There's nothing to it. It's my way of saying thank you. You see, I was carrying more money with me than I normally would because I had been on a buying trip for material, and if the robbers had gotten away with it, well, it would have been a devastating loss.
Yes. Well, speaking for my husband, the mayor, please give him the thanks of the entire town.
I shall.
The sun slipped down below El Capitan, and while it was not dark yet, the shadows had begun to lengthen by the time Matt arrived at the Milner Hotel. The floor of the lobby in the Milner was of wide, unvarnished planks of wood, though much of it was covered with a patterned carpet of rose and gray. There was a leather sofa and several comfortable chairs scattered about. A large fireplace was at one end of the lobby, though as it was summer, no fire was burning. Matt walked across the lobby to the front desk.
Yes, sir. May I help you?
I'd like a room, preferably one at the front of the building with a window view that looks down onto the street.
I think we can accommodate you, Mr.
Jensen. Matt Jensen.
Jensen? Yes, I've heard your name mentioned many times today. You were the one who saved the stagecoach, aren't you?
I was there. I don't know that you would say I saved it.
Well, Mr. Jensen, I will give you a room in front of the hotel that looks right down onto the street. And if you want to know the truth, it's also the finest room in the hotel. I heard what you've done for the town, so there's nothing too good for you, Mr. Jensen.
Thank you.
When Bill Carter stepped through the front door of the Milner Hotel, he walked straight to the front desk where the clerk was sitting.
Yes, sir. Now, how may I help you?
I'm looking for Emmett Barnes. What room is he in?
Emmett Barnes? I don't believe I remember such a person checking in.
He's here. I know he is, cousin. I'm supposed to meet him right here at this hotel.
I will check, but I'm sure I don't remember seeing that name.
Oh, don't tell me he ain't here.
The clerk examined the registration book and shook his head.
No, sir, it is just as I thought. We have nobody by the name of Barnes who is registered at this hotel.
This is the only hotel in town, ain't it?
Yes, sir, it is. But I assure you, there is nobody by the name of Emmett Barnes registered here.
You're lying. Let me look at your registration book. I'll find it myself.
All right. Look for yourself.
The clerk turned the book around.
I have no reason to be lying to you, sir. And as you will see, there is no such person here.
Carter looked through the book until he found the name he was looking for. Then he pushed the book back.
You're right. He ain't here.
Would you like to leave a message in the event Mr. Barnes checks in?
In case who checks in?
Mr. Barnes.
No, why would I want to leave him a message?
Well, I don't know why, sir. You were the one who was looking for him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was, wasn't I? No message.
Very good, sir.
You see the second window from the left, Fletcher? I'm talking about the one on the top floor.
Yeah, I see it.
That's Jensen's room.
Carter looked up and down the street.
Damn.
What is it?
Hell, it's gonna be easy. All we gotta do is climb up in on the loft livery stable. It's right across the street. And from there, we have a perfect view of the hotel.
What good will that do?
Well, think about it, Lenny. If we are up there in the loft with rifles, he's gonna come stand at the window sometime. They don't know but to take a hotel room without looking through the window out onto the town. And as soon as he does that, all we gotta do is pull the trigger. He'll be dead before he knows what hit him.
Yeah, I like that.
When Annabelle stepped into the lobby of the Milner Hotel, the hotel clerk was surprised to see her.
Miss O'Callaghan, what can I do for you this evening?
Oh, hello, Michael. I'm having dinner with Mr. Jensen tonight. I assume he is one of your hotel guests?
Oh, he is indeed. He is on the second floor, room 201. Would you like me to run up and summon him for you?
Oh, no, if it is all right with you, I'll go up myself. Oh, that is, if you don't think it would be too scandalous.
Miss O'Callaghan, your reputation is such that I don't think it would be possible for you to do anything scandalous. Go right on up.
Thank you.
Bathed, shaved, and in clean clothes, Matt Jensen wore little resemblance to the trail-worn and dirt-covered traveler who had ridden into town today. It had grown dark outside, and the first thing Matt had done after checking into his hotel room was light the lantern. Taking no chances, Matt stepped to the wall just beside the door, then, reaching out, turned the knob and jerked the door open. A woman, who was just about to knock on the door a second time, lost her balance because of the sudden opening of the door, and she had to step into the room very quickly in order to stay erect.
Hello?
She turned toward him with a smile, but the smile left her face when she saw that he was holding a gun.
Oh!
I'm sorry, I didn't expect a woman at my door.
Matt put the pistol back into his holster.
Mr. Jensen, do you so often expect brigands that you must answer the door while armed?
Well, to tell the truth, it's just a habit that I've developed over time. I always figured that it's better to be safe than sorry. And, to tell the truth, I didn't expect you to come calling for me.
Oh, was I mistaken? We did have a dinner engagement for this evening, did we not?
Yes, ma'am, I'm happy to say that we do, only I figured I'd probably just meet you there.
Meet me where? We hadn't made any plans beyond just having dinner.
Well, I had supposed that I would meet you at the restaurant.
Which restaurant?
Which one? Mr. Hawkins led me to believe that there's only one restaurant in town.
Mr. Hawkins is talking about Moe's Cafe, no doubt. And he is correct when he says that Moe's is the only restaurant in town. But we aren't going to Moe's Cafe. Shady Rest has a Merchants Association club that is surprisingly urbane for a town this size. It has a wonderful chef, and they serve dinners that are far superior to anything Moe's can put on the table. If it's all right with you, that's where I thought we would eat tonight. It's a private club, but as a merchant, I belong. You shall be my guest for the evening.
The woman, who was now standing in Matt's hotel room, was not only beautiful, she exhibited the innocence of that breed of woman that Matt often saw, but never touched. She belonged to what he referred to as the other life. The other life consisted of hard-working, honest men who ranched or farmed, who drove wagons or stagecoaches, who clerked in stores and worked in offices. It also consisted of the women and children who were there in support of those same hard-working, honest men. Matt's referring to theirs as the other life was not a derisive sobriquet. On the contrary, they were people he admired, respected, and envied. For nearly his entire life, Matt had lived in a world that was parallel to, but not a part of, the other life. Had he not been orphaned at an early age, had things not been so drastically changed by events over which he had no control, he might have been one of those people, and a woman such as Annabelle might be his own. But the world in which Matt now lived was one of transience and a surprising amount of violence, and the women of his life of transience and violence were nothing like the woman who had identified herself as Annabelle O'Callaghan.
Shall we go, Mr. Jensen? Or are you just going to stand there and look at me as if I were on display?
Can you blame me? I'm enjoying the display. But give me just a moment to put out the lantern before we leave, would you? I don't like leaving a lit lantern in an empty room.
Oh, that's probably a good idea.
Matt walked over to the window and reached down toward the lantern. Bending down, just as he did, proved to be a fortuitous move, for out of the corner of his eye, he saw a sudden flash of light from the livery stable just across the street. Matt moved across the room to grab her and pull her to the floor with him as another shot blasted in on the heels of the first.
What is it? What's happening? Who is shooting at us?
They aren't shooting at us. They're shooting at me. You just happen to be with me.
Slithering across the room on his stomach, Matt rose up and extinguished the lantern. Then, without the backlight, he raised his head up just far enough to stare into the darkness across the street. He was certain that the muzzle flash had come from the loft of the livery stable, but he was equally certain that whoever it was had left when they realized they hadn't hit him and no longer had a target.
Damn, we missed!
Fletcher raised his rifle to his shoulder, but Carter pushed it down.
No sense in shooting now. He's put the light out. We'd just be shooting in the dark.
What do we do now?
We go back to the pig palace.
Well, don't you think we ought to maybe get out of town? We just shot into a hotel room trying to kill somebody.
Did you hear that? Hell, someone shoots a gun off in this town just about every 15 minutes. What's a couple more gunshots?
Oh, yeah, I reckon you're right.
Back at the pig palace, Carter and Fletcher found a place back in the corner and both sat drinking a beer.
You two still sitting back there? Damn, you've been there all night. Don't you ever do anything but sit around?
Sitting around's hard work. You get so tired doing it that you can't hardly do nothing else but sit.
Damn, don't anybody even know we was gone.
Yeah, don't say nothing else. Let's keep it that way.
From his hotel room, Matt continued to stare out into the darkness, but he saw no activity of any kind, and decided that, without the glowing lantern providing a target, his assailant, or assailants, had probably left by now. Feeling confident enough to stand up, he looked at the two panes of glass that had been shot out.
Oh, my, I just know that I'm getting my dress all wrinkled.
If the worst thing is that you're getting your dress wrinkled, then I guess you're in good shape.
Well, yes, I suppose that's right.
I guess I won't have to raise the window tonight. I'm getting plenty of air now. Shall we go to dinner?
What? Someone tries to kill you and all you can say is, shall we go to dinner?
I'm hungry. Besides, that's no different from you worrying about getting your dress wrinkled.
Matt held his hand down toward her to help her up, but she hesitated.
It's all right. It's safe now. Whoever it was, they're gone.
How do you know they're gone?
Because when I stood in the window, they didn't take another shot at me.
That seems a rather foolish way to test your theory.
But effective.
Matt was still holding his hand down toward her, and she took it, then got to her feet. When they reached the lobby of the hotel, the clerk was standing at the front door looking out onto the dark street.
Mr. Jensen, Miss O'Callaghan, did you hear the shooting from outside?
Yes.
Yes, I thought I heard something. Oh, by the way, just for your information, there are a couple of broken panes in the window to my room.
I will tell Mr. Milner about it tomorrow. Enjoy your dinner.
Thank you. Good night, Michael.
The Merchants Association Club was actually on the top floor of Dupree's Emporium. Matt had certainly been in places that were as elegant or even more elegant before, but he didn't expect such a place in Shady Rest. Inside the club, the hardwood floor glistened under a very large Axminster carpet. The carpet was lawn green with wine-colored nine-point starbursts in attractive patterns throughout. The walls were paneled with rich cherry, with carved camphorwood inserts, and the chairs around the white linen-covered tables were elegantly upholstered in a green and wine Bargello needlework tapestry.
What do you think of our club?
I'm impressed.
The decent citizens of the town need something like this. Sometimes I fear our town is defined by those terrible places down on First Street.
First Street?
You've probably already heard it referred to as Plantation Row.
Yes.
A well-dressed waiter approached the table.
Would you trust me to order for us?
I'd appreciate it if you ordered for us. After all, I presume you know the club and the chef.
Bonsoir, Marcel. Nous aurons le rôti de bœuf, pommes de terre cuites, les asperges, et une bonne bourgogne, s'il vous plaît.
Très bonne, Mademoiselle O'Callaghan.
Now I'm really impressed. What'd you order?
Oh, I'm showing off. I studied French in school, not Spanish, mind you, but French. So, where do I wind up? In Texas, where many speak Spanish, while Marcel and I may be the only two people within 100 miles in any direction who speak French. So, we always take advantage of that when we can. I ordered roast beef, baked potato asparagus, and a good red wine.
And to think that last night I had rabbit.
Rabbit?
Without salt.
As they waited for the meal to be delivered, they were approached by a middle-aged woman who was dressed all in black and wearing a black lace veil. When she reached the table, Matt stood.
Please, be seated, young man. I just want to say a few words to Miss O'Callaghan.
Mr. Jensen, this is Mrs. Pruitt. She was Marshall Pruitt's mother.
Oh, you have my sincerest condolences, ma'am.
Thank you. And Miss O'Callaghan, I want to thank you so much for this morning dress. What a wonderful and caring thing for you to do. And I want you to know that I will pay for it as soon as I can save the money.
No, please, no.
Annabelle reached out to put her hand lightly on the woman's arm.
The dress is yours for no charge. I am only sorry that the occasion arose that required such a dress.
Well, I must go. I'm not a member of the club, but the Maitre d' graciously let me in to speak with you.
Won't you stay as my guest?
Oh, thank you, but no. I must get back home. Mr. Pruitt and I have been receiving callers all day, as you can imagine, and I must be there to help welcome them. But again, I thank you.
Although Mrs. Pruitt had excused Matt from standing, he remained on his feet until the grieving woman left the dining room.
Sometimes I think the people of Shady Rest think of the many killings that go on here as little more than a stain on the reputation of our town. They don't go beyond that, to think about the human part of it, the mothers, wives, and loved ones who are left behind.
Matt just nodded. He made no verbal answer because he couldn't. His life was such that he often encountered life and death, kill or be killed situations, and he couldn't afford such thoughts. In order to survive in his world, it was absolutely necessary that he develop a degree of detachment. Nonetheless, he could feel a sense of respect and admiration for Annabelle's sensitivity. When the meal was delivered, Matt savored every bite, storing it away to be remembered at some future point when, on the trail, he would be eating jerky and drinking tepid water. Then, just as they were finishing their meal, they were approached by Deputy Prescott. Prescott nodded his greeting toward Annabelle, then turned to Matt.
Mr. Jensen, when do you expect to leave town?
Why do you ask? Are you running me out?
No, sir. Nothing like that at all. It's just that I was wondering if you're going to be staying around long enough to collect the reward.
Oh, yes, for Mutt Crowley. $500 from Las Animas County in Colorado, I believe, for escaping jail. Sure, I'll wait around for it.
No, sir. I don't know anything about that reward. The reward I'm talking about ain't from Las Animas County. It's from Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo? Why would Wells Fargo be paying a reward for someone who escaped from jail?
That ain't what they're paying the reward for. And the reward ain't for $500 neither. It's for $5,000.
$5,000?
Yes, sir. $5,000. It seems Mr. Crowley and his gang stole $12,500 from a bank in Kansas. And they also killed some people up there. I'll contact the county sheriff tomorrow and have him send off the reward. That is, if you're planning on staying around town long enough to collect it.
Oh, I'll be here all right.
I sort of thought you might be.
After the dinner, Matt walked Annabelle back to her apartment.
Thank you very much for the great dinner, but I do hope you'll let me repay you. Though I guess dinner at Moe's is about the best I can do.
Why, Mr. Jensen, don't you know that the best ingredient for any dinner is the company you share? I not only would be delighted to have dinner at Moe's with you, it is something that I positively expect.
After Matt left, Annabelle stepped up to the front window of her upstairs bedroom and pulled the shade aside, watching him as he walked back to the hotel. She had never given serious consideration to settling down with any man, and she could enumerate a dozen or more reasons why. Principal among those reasons was the fact that she had no wish to give up her independence, and any man would insist that she do so. It wasn't something she had to think about in Shady Rest anyway. There had never been any single men in town that she found interesting enough to even consider giving up her freedom. Until Matt Jensen. She was glad he was not a permanent resident of Shady Rest, nor did it appear that he would soon become one. She watched him until he turned into the front door of the hotel. Then she left the window, undressed, and went to bed. Alone. That was funny, she thought as she lay in bed, staring up into the darkness. She had been going to bed alone for her entire life. But never, until this very moment, had she thought about it that way. When Matt returned to his hotel room, he thought of Annabelle. He found her a most fascinating woman. At first, he'd admire her cheekiness, the though he thought she might be just a little too forward. Of course, he was also aware of her beauty. Then, tonight, he'd learned that she was a woman of great sensitivities. Matt's chosen lifestyle was such that there really was no room for a woman, though he certainly wasn't without experience. A banker's daughter in Cheyenne once thought she could make him settle down. A soiled dove in the territories knew that she couldn't, but she took what he offered. There had been, from time to time, women along the way, like mileposts on a journey. Was Annabelle O'Callaghan such a woman? It was too early to tell. When Matt went to bed in his hotel room that night, he hung his holster from the headboard of the bedstead so he could get to the gun easily if he had to. He had no idea who it was that had taken a shot at him tonight, but if they tried again, he wanted to be ready for them. The next morning, Matt awoke to what he thought was gunfire. He sat straight up in bed, slipped his pistol from the holster which hung from the bedpost, then got to his feet ready for any intrusion. Matt moved over to the window and pulled the curtain to one side as he looked down on the street. The street was full of men and women, and Matt decided he would go down to have breakfast and see what was going on. 15 minutes later, Matt was in Moe's Cafe eating a sandwich of bacon, egg, and biscuit when Deputy Prescott came into the cafe and, seeing Matt, came over to visit him.
I haven't been keeping up with the date. Is it the 4th of July?
4th of July? No, what makes you think that?
Then why all the fireworks?
You're the cause of the fireworks.
Deputy, I don't have the slightest idea what you're talking about. How am I the cause of your celebration?
I take it you haven't gone down to look at the display in front of Ponder's shop yet.
No.
Go take a look, Mr. Jensen. Then you'll see what all the celebrating is about.
Finishing his biscuit, Matt walked down toward the Ponder's mortuary. There were several people, men, women, and children, standing around, looking at what was displayed there. Just as Matt approached, he saw a powder flash from someone taking a picture. He wondered what the picture was of, but when he picked his way through the gathered crowd, he saw the subject of the photography. Mutt Crowley's body, his skin now a pale blue-white, had been tied to a board and propped up against the front of Ponder's place of business. Crowley's right eye was shut, but the left eye, the one with the scarred, disfigured eyelid, was open and opaque. Many of the more daring children would occasionally get close enough to touch the cold, clammy skin.
The county sheriff has asked that a picture be taken of the body so as to prove that Mutt Crowley has actually been killed. He said without the proof, he can't rightly tell the Wells Fargo folks that they need to pay the reward.
Look! That's him! It's Matt Jensen!
3 cheers for Matt Jensen! Hip, hip!
Hooray!
Hip, hip!
Hooray!
Hip, hip!
Hooray!
Just as Matt was about to hold up his hand to silence the crowd, he noticed a hand-lettered sign. Here is the body of Mutt Crowley, killed by Matt Jensen, just after Crowley murdered Marshal Devery Pruitt.
I still don't understand why all the celebration.
It's simple. Pruitt is the fourth marshal we've had killed in the last 4 months. The man who killed the marshal was killed himself, and there he is, and you're the one that done it.
Richard Crowley lay asleep in the sheriff's office when someone awakened him.
What the hell?
He sat up in the car.
Who is it? What do you want?
You the sheriff?
I'm the deputy.
Sheriff or deputy, don't matter none. You'll do just as good.
I'll do just as good as what?
For me to turn in the body for bounty.
Pritchard walked over to the desk, lit the lantern, then turned it up. In the lantern's glow, he saw the bounty hunter. About 5'9", the bounty hunter had a hooked nose and an upturned chin that looked almost as if they wanted to join. His cheeks were sunken and his eyes were dark beads under dark eyebrows. He was wearing a stained hat.
Who have you got?
The bounty hunter pulled a folded and wrinkled wanted poster from his pocket and spread it out on the desk by the lantern.
I got this here feller, throat belly down over his horse outside. All I need from you is a receipt saying, yeah, this is him, and you can put in for my reward.
How do you know the man you have is Holder?
Hell, it's easy. He got part of his ear bit off last time when he was in prison, and he's missing 2 fingers on his left hand.
That was what Pritchard wanted to hear. Because he was in charge of posting all the wanted posters, he was aware not only of who Holder was, but of his physical description.
What's your name?
Name's Franken. Harry Franken. Probably ain't nobody around here ever heard of me. I mostly stay around San Antone. But I got word that Holder was over here, and sure enough, when I come over here, I found him. He was hiding out in a cabin, no more than 5 miles from here.
So this was the first place you came? What I mean is, nobody else has seen the body?
No. Why would I go anywhere else? I told you. I found him in a cabin, not more than 5 miles west of here. Down in a draw, it was. Why, you could damn near ride right by it and miss it. But I knowed what I was looking for, you see, and I found it. So what I done is, I took my rifle and laid nearby in some rocks. Where I was no more than 50 yards away from the front door. I waited till he come out to take a piss. Then while he was standing there, taking him a piss, why, I shot him. Now, don't you know, he was some surprised getting shot right while he was taking a piss.
I will have to validate your claim.
You'll have to what?
I'll have to see him.
Oh, well, sure, if that's all. Like I said, I got him throwed over his horse. Come on outside and I'll show him to you.
Franken started toward the door, and Pritchard followed along behind. Franken stopped and looked back.
Won't you be needing a lantern?
Why? I can determine if part of his ear and two fingers are missing without a lantern.
Yeah, I reckon you can at that.
As the two men started through the door, Pritchard, who was following behind, reached over to pick up a piece of wire that was left over from having suspended from the picture rail a photograph of John Ireland, governor of Texas. The two men stepped out into the dark night, made even darker by the fact that there was no moon. There was also no street lamps near the sheriff's office.
I don't know. It's pretty dark. You sure you'll be able to see enough?
I'm sure.
There were two horses tied in front of the sheriff's office. One of them had a body draped over the saddle, and the other was empty.
Grab him by the hair and lift his head up.
All right.
Franken grabbed Holder's head by the hair and lifted it up.
It was his left ear that was bit off, and if you look here, you can see what I'm talking
about. Pritchard looped the wire around Franken's neck, then tightened it.
This is called a garrote. You may be interested in knowing that it was used primarily as a means of execution by the Spanish. But it is also an excellent weapon for killing quietly and without too much blood.
Within less than a minute, Franken grew limp, and even in the dim light, Pritchard could see that his face was now discolored and contorted. His tongue was forced out of his mouth. Pritchard removed the wire and let Franken's body fall to the ground. Then he looked around to make certain no one had seen what just happened. It was a needless precaution because it was 2 o'clock in the morning. It was pitch dark, and the nearest house was at least 100 yards away. He was absolutely positive he hadn't been seen. Pritchard draped Franken over his own horse and tied him securely. Then he saddled his horse and led the two horses, both bearing bodies, out of town. It was well after daylight when Pritchard returned and Sheriff Nelson was waiting for him.
Where have you been?
Didn't you get my note?
What note?
Well, as you are aware, since you are the one who assigned the task to me, I've been processing wanted posters. Because of that, I've come across considerable information about many of the wanted men, and last night, I saw Barry Holder coming into town. I challenged him, and he turned and galloped off. It took me a couple of minutes to get saddled, so I left you a note to tell you where... Oh, no, wait. That was dumb of me. I wrote the note, but I forgot to leave it.
He pulled the note out of his pocket.
Anyway, you can read the note. It says that I'm going in pursuit of Mr. Holder, which I did, and I've got him. He's draped across his horse, and now the state of Texas owes me $2,500.
Connor, you need to slow down a little. At the rate you're going, you could wind up having my job after the next election.
Not to worry, Sheriff. I have no intention of standing for Sheriff. I am perfectly content to be your deputy.
Well, I've said it before. You're a good man.
Pritchard was sitting behind the desk in the sheriff's office when a pretty blonde-haired woman came in. She was carrying a package.
Yes, ma'am. May I be of assistance?
Pritchard stood to greet the woman.
Deputy, I don't know if you remember me. We spoke briefly the other day. I'm Margaret Margrave.
Oh, indeed, I do remember you, Miss Margrave. You are the school teacher.
Yes, I'm flattered that you remember.
How could I not remember someone as lovely as you?
Margaret blushed, then reached up self-consciously to adjust her already perfectly coiffed hair.
Some friends and I, wanted to welcome you to our fair city, especially as you have taken on the dangerous responsibility of the role of deputy sheriff. So we, that is, I, on their behalf, made a batch of cookies for you. I know that it is probably foolish and perhaps even juvenile, but just wanted to express our appreciation.
She opened the package for him.
Ah, oatmeal cookies.
Pritchard took a bite of one of the cookies.
I hope you like them. Some people, I suppose, think of oats only as food for horses.
It is said of the oat, Miss Margrave, that it is a grain which in England is generally given to horses, but in Scotland supports the people. But the Scots say that England is noted for the excellence of her horses, while Scotland is known for the excellence of her men.
Oh, what a delightful tidbit.
Yes, I perceived that you were of the intelligence and education to enjoy something like that.
Oh, Deputy Connor.
Couldn't you call me Abe?
I wouldn't want to be so forward as to presume.
There is no presumption if the invitation is offered, Margaret.
Very well. I shall be happy to call you Abe. You know, Abe, it has been very difficult for me to make gentlemen friends in Pecos.
Oh, now, that is difficult to believe. You are an exceptionally beautiful woman, well-mannered, educated, and intelligent.
Yes, and there is the rub. I hope you do not take this as being conceited, though I confess that it may sound so. The truth is, Abe, I find it difficult to relate to men who are...
Intellectually inferior.
Oh dear, you must think me quite the snob.
On the contrary, Margaret, I understand perfectly, for I have had the same difficulty in establishing any type of relationship with a woman. I bore quickly of their talk of quilting and cooking and babies and such. I find myself longing for a discussion that will satisfy my intellectual curiosity.
Oh, we are alike. I knew it.
I would appreciate the opportunity to call on you sometime.
Yes. Oh, no. I'm afraid that can't be.
Why is that?
My contract with the school board. Not only must I remain single, I cannot be seen publicly with a man.
Then, as Romeo and Juliet were forced to keep their love a secret, so too shall we keep our friendship a secret.
Margaret started toward the door, then turned and held her hand out toward Pritchard.
Good night. Good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night till it be morrow.
Pritchard smiled, then held his hand out toward her.
Sleep dwell upon thine eyes, peace in thy breast. Would I were sleep and peace, so sweet to rest.
Methinks this bird is prime for the plucking.